With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Oh, you're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde, and we have our gardening professor guru, Wally Richards. Good morning, Wally.
Good morning, Rodney, and good morning to all those wonderful gardeners out there.
Now, listeners don't get to see you like I do.
Just as well.
Quite possibly for both of us. But I notice that you have a similar haircut to mine.
Yes. It's called the baldy look.
There, you just get the razor.
Yep.
And you slice it all off.
Yeah, you take it all off. And I tell you what, remember I talked about that MSM stuff some time ago, et cetera, which I've been taking for many a year.
Yes. Right?
And, of course, naturally I've gone bald in the parts and so forth, just like everybody, and you've got that side bits, et cetera, right? Now, what has happened, I have had regrowth in the baldy bits, right?
Really?
Yeah, and that regrowth is dark. And my side bits are white. And if
that's
I
strange.
Look, I look like a reverse skunk.
So well, I remember when I challenged up my diet at one stage, I thought my hair was coming back and I let it grow, but it didn't last, as they say. It was a bit of a false dawn. Tell me, how long have you had the baldy look?
My goodness me, it must be going about 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a lot of people did it way back then, you know, whatever that hair they had. It was clean, it looked good. But I remember when I was a kid in Palmerston North, and there was a group of guys who were a sort of a gang, and they shaved their head. Now, this is going back over 60 years ago. And those guys were considered really strange because back then it was all short back and sides only. There's no cut it all off type of thing unless you're naturally born. And then they became skinheads.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we're very lucky because when I had hair, long hair was the fashion. And then when I lost my hair, shaving it all off was rather cool and fashionable. And I have to say, the best thing I've ever done is shave all my hair off because you look a bit silly with just, you know, a bald patch on top. And remember the comb overs? I never did that. I was never that vain. But I remember, was it Corrie Wettery? Who was it, the politician that had this massive comb over where the hair basically was like a one sideboard that was flipped over.
Retransplants and all that sort of carry on. But look at the saving time. In the shower, you don't have to wash your hair.
No.
You don't carry a comb in the back pocket anymore.
No.
It's brilliant if you don't have to, after being in the wind, have to recomb your bloody hair again.
And the only thing you need is a hat.
Yes. But I tell you what, it's the best temperature gauge in the world.
Yes.
If you walk past something that's been turned on and forgotten about, immediately you feel it on your head.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, I forgot to turn the oven off.
Yeah. Now, I bet you don't do what I do.
No.
I bet you use a plastic razor to shave your head.
The Jiffy Lip razors or the Zip or whatever.
Yeah.
No, you use a cutthroat.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you?
I haven't used a cutthroat since I was in the 20s or 30s, I used to. But that was for shaving then because I had long hair.
No, I use a cutthroat and I use it over my back of my head, over the top of my head, and I never cut myself.
Right. Yeah.
Once your skin gets used to it and there's no going back, I quite like the drama of getting out the cutthroat razor, getting out the flannel, stropping it, every now and then sharpening it, and then shaving. And it's this little moment to myself of being manly. And when you pull out a cutthroat razor, you do feel rather manly because it's a serious weapon.
Yeah.
And then you shave yourself with it. And I don't have those plastic things.
No,
By the way, it's a great conspiracy theory about how we came up with Gillette. King Gillette was the guy that invented the throwaway blade.
Yeah.
And no one wanted it because they said, why would I get a throwaway blade when I just get a razor that lasts me my entire life, will be good for my son, will be good for my grandson, and will work for my great-grandson. Right. And I sharpen it each day. And so he was going nowhere. World War One occurred, and the men, they used to have beards if you're an officer in the army. But in World War One, the beard was a danger because the gas masks wouldn't work.
Ah, right.
Not only that, you had to be clean shaven for the gas mask to work. And so the soldiers were issued with Gillette razors. This is my understanding of the story. And when they came home in America, they were required, of course, to be clean shaven for the trenches and the fighting. And on parade, they'd be clean shaven. And they came home with these fancy safety razors.
Right.
And they took off because they were cool. And out went the cutthroat.
Right, yeah.
Here's a bit of history for you, Wally. How do we get onto this? I don't know. I was, first of all, I've got to start off because I learned something that I didn't know from a listener. We had Phyllis Atichin on, and we were talking about making smoothies, and she struggled to put a banana in her smoothie because she said she couldn't readily find properly certified organic bananas, and that she was deeply suspicious of the very expensive bananas in the supermarket that say they're organic. I never buy them because they're too dear. And so I've always bought, you know, just the cheap bananas. And a listener wrote in and said you can grow your own. And she was, I think, in the Hawke's Bay growing bananas. I'd never heard of such a thing. Is this true?
Yeah.
Of course it's true. Tell me about do you know about the growing of bananas?
Yes, I do. And I am so sad because I had a beautiful banana tree with a pup coming off the side of it. It hadn't fruited yet, and it was about, 2.5 meters tall. They're quite tall, these things. And when I went out with my baby guard months or so back and sprayed my passion fruit vine and my avocados and all the tender things, I forgot the bloody banana palm. And now, after having a frost, all the leaves have gone black as, and I am hopeful it's going to recover later on and produce more leaves again. The same plant did actually fruit for me when I had it in a container in Palmerston North, where I was sheltering it against the side of the building, being in the container and see what to do. And we got a bunch of what I call baby finger bananas. Good to eat. So that's in Palmerston North Martin. You need the frost protection, I think. But no, they grow okay and they multiply out from right?
And how do you grow a banana? Where do you get a banana seed from? What do you do to make a banana happen?
There's no seed. Banana is one of the most interesting plants in the world because it's a fruit that has no seed. Right. Now, apparently, according to what I read a long time ago, way back in times when things were totally different on the planet, that the very sophisticated gardeners of the time bred bananas to be seedless. Right. And the only way they can be propagated is from the pups that come off. And they suck it very well, right? So each palm will produce babies. And you can take those babies off and replant them, or you could just leave it as a clump. So that's the only way you can grow them.
And so you got to know someone with a banana tree.
Yeah. I have, on the odd occasion, seen garden centres and so forth. Some nursery will import in young plants, get it okayed by MAF, and pot them up, sell them as an ornamental. Very nice. And then the bonus, of course, is if they do flower and fruit.
And they need pollination? Do you need a male and a female? Or
No, just one plant, set fruit, no problems.
And how extraordinary. And so how long does it take your thing to produce fruit?
It would depend, I think, on where you are. Like if you're in North Auckland, up there in the warmer climes, taking a pup, which is about, a couple of foot high, off and then growing that, it would take probably a season or two to get up to a mature size. And then after that, you could expect fruit probably every year. Like if you're in the Philippines or Fiji or somewhere like that, they're prolific. They just grow everywhere. And nobody does anything except nick the fruit or take the fruit or harvest the fruit.
Yeah, interesting. And tell me, do you need to, obviously they can't take a frost, so you need your vapor guard if you're getting a frost.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm so silly that I forgot it. I'm really annoyed about that. But see, my passion fruit vine, my avocados, the younger lemons, citrus, beautiful. No damage whatsoever.
Proves the success of your vapor guard.
Yeah, and we've had two or three, very good, on the ground, covered grass with white frost, bloody cold, like the old days.
I never knew you could grow bananas. There you go. I got out. And so they don't have any sexual reproduction?
No.
Because they don't. Oh, and they don't need to pollinate.
I would presume that it comes out as like the bunch.
Yes.
Right? It's a big flower sort of thing. I presume it's self-pollinating or self-fertile. I never took much notice of it when I had one in Palmerston. I think it's the same one as I got now and relocated and put it into the ground. Levin, friends that I used to know down there, but they had part of their backyard. It was covered in banana plants. They just multiplied out.
And perchance, could you grow them in a glasshouse?
Oh, yeah, you could. You need a tall glasshouse,
yes.
not a domestic type one. You need because the height factor, right?
And when do they produce their bananas, when and for how long?
Good question. Once they're old enough or the conditions are right enough, they will flower. And the bunch, like I've heard people say, to ripen them on the vine, on the plant, you put a plastic bag over it, a clear plastic bag, and that concentrates the heat and so forth and ripens a bit faster. But, yeah, down your part of the woods, possibility of growing a banana other than a pot plant inside is probably fairly remote. But even inside, there's a possibility, given good light through a big windows or something, or even in a conservatory-type situation, that you'd fruit. Okay.
Amazing. I should tell listeners that I hit Wally with bananas to test him. I didn't tell him that we're going to talk bananas. And I thought he'd look at me bemused, thinking, I have to think about that or look it up because, bananas aren't a thing that I've really looked into. You have a breadth of knowledge, Wally.
I'm just old and remember. I can remember way back when I was 9 months old.
No.
Yes, I can. Because at 9 months old, my grandfather died. And prior to him dying, every morning, I would, when I could crawl, I would crawl to his bedroom and somebody would, he was bedridden, right, in his latter days. And my mother or an auntie or somebody would lift me up onto his bed and we'd spend the morning together, me and my old grandfather on my mother's side, right? And then one morning, his door was closed. My God. And I knocked on the door, and one of my aunts, in fact, quite a few of my aunties happened to be there. And one of them picked me up, and she opened the door, and I looked in, and I went, bye-bye, Grandad. You died. I knew. I still remember it.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have a picture of it that they'd shown you. You remembered it. It wasn't something necessarily you were told about, maybe. H.L. Mencken, who I adore, he had a memory going right back to when he was like 2 years old and maintained that it was a true memory. But something like that, isn't that amazing? So let's just...
No, it's not. Because in your brain, all the things that happened from the day you were born are there. It's just that you don't know the door to get to them.
Yeah.
And it's like they say when you die, your whole life flashes back past you, yes. Right? Okay. So you're looking at that memory pattern. Yes. When you
what die. Year was that and how old was he?
Well, that's 1946.
And how old was he?
My grandfather.
When he died?
Good question. I don't know. He was in his 90s. He
was no.
Old. Yeah.
So let's think about that. You touched base with a person who was born in the 1850s.
Yeah.
Isn't that extraordinary?
And my grandmother, his wife, she lived on till I was about 5 years old. And she was blind. And the old house that which was their house, which my mother was the youngest of 14 children, right? And she was a spinster. And anyway, she inherited the house at the end, but it was her duty of a family of being the youngest to look after the parents.
Yes.
So she never had an occupation. That was her job. She looked after the house, did the gardens, ran the chooks. Oh, wonderful woman. And she died.
This is your mother?
My mother. She died.
How could she have been a spinster and had you?
Ah, that was a very naughty thing because my father was a postman and he delivered more than letters.
Oh, no.
Yes, my God. He's dead too now, of course. But
so they weren't married?
No. And she, when it happened,
what a story, Wally. What town was this?
She couldn't hide her belly anymore. So her father realized, and that was total disgrace back then.
Total.
Absolute. It was the biggest sin you could ever commit, my God.
Total.
And he wouldn't even talk to her. And he was bedridden. She had to tend him or do all the bits. The bowl underneath for the toilet, you know, everything. And he wouldn't talk to her while she looked after him until
my
I was born.
Goodness me.
And I was taken in and shown to him, he changed. He had his great-grandson or whatever it was. Grandson. And it softened his heart. And he accepted her and me.
What a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And how old was your mother when she had you?
35.
Did she ever marry? Did she ever marry subsequently?
Yeah, she did in the end. But they had another child between them. He was married to another woman, of course. And my younger brother's 7 years old, 7 years younger, should I say. And I remember I was, yeah, he was a baby in a pram, and he would have only been 6, 9 months old or something like that, maybe a year. And I was given 5 shillings to take him for a walk in this pram and buy him something and myself while they went to the registry office in Palmerston North and got married. I remember that distinctly. In fact, I told my little brother, and he's old now, he's 7 years, he's what, 65? No, he's coming up 70. Yeah, well, he's 70 something. I told him the other day, I said, he couldn't remember it, of course. I said, I had 5 shillings and I was told to buy you and me something. I said, you got sixpence of that 5 shillings.
Because 5 shillings was a fortune.
It was. I got toys and so forth. And my brother said to me, my God, he said, even if you just bought me an all-day sucker, I would have been happy. I said, that's all you got.
And it was a cheap wedding, 5 shillings in the registry fee.
Yeah, so they got married. He couldn't get a divorce for quite some time. But the unfortunate thing with my father is First World War vet, right?
This is the postman or your stepdad?
Yeah, no, my father. I never had a stepfather.
I see. The postman married your mother in the finish.
Yes.
Ah.
Right. Anyway, when he was in France and he got shot up went to the French hospital, after the First World War, the trenches and so forth. Anyway, what transpired, a French doctor said to him, his name is Dick, Cobbin, Richard actually, but Dick was called. He said, Dick, you'll be okay for the rest of your life as long as you never work inside. You must always remember you've got to work outside and you'll have a good life. If you don't, you'll go downhill fast. And sure enough, he came back. He got a job in the PNT as a postman. And he was a postman for so many years. It's not even funny. And he kept refusing promotion. Promotion would take him inside to become a sorter. And at the end, they said, well, you've got to, no matter what, you've got to take the job. He only lasted about 3 years as a sorter and he's bedridden for the rest of his life.
My goodness, what happened to him in the World War One?
He got shot up. I remember one time a friend lent me a set of drums, which I set up in the backyard, and I started learning to play drums. And the boom, boom, he went shell-shocked. He could hear it in his bed, the boom in the background. And it just about sent him crazy.
What we did to those men.
Yeah.
And their wives and girlfriends. What we did to them, it was terrible.
Oops.
Some of those that died had the better outcome than some of those that came home.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And you and I knew, I knew First World War One veterans, and I knew a lot of Second World War veterans. And we never cut them any slack. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't say, oh, wow, they just had to get on with it. And I had some crazy school teachers who had very bad tempers. And then I look back on it, and, of course, they were World War II veterans.
Yeah.
And they weren't right.
No.
Your dad wasn't right, right? He wasn't well.
The trauma of being constantly a threat of death. And let's face it, one out of so many survived, yes. And that were the odds. Sometimes was saying, I saw somewhere that the average soldier's life was 52 minutes. My God.
Yeah.
Ah, my God. Anyway, let's get to gardening.
And what they saw?
What they saw, horrific. People blown to pieces. You could be sitting standing in a trench next to somebody, and the next thing, the bloke next to you is all over the place.
That's right.
Yeah.
I read a shocking statistic of First World War, that 75% of the men killed in the trenches were blind to bits by the artillery. So it wasn't like you see them running and getting shot. That happened a lot. But for every one shot, there were, what, three blind to bits? Just not even knowing. Just sitting, hiding in your trench, boom, 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 like the drums, and then the shell hits where you are.
Yeah.
And you're blind to bits, dead. None, they don't even find you.
Yeah, you wouldn't even know it. You're having a ciggy, like they used to supply cigarettes, like you wouldn't believe. And next thing, you're not there.
How long was your dad bedridden? How many years?
Good question. I can't remember. Probably about 10 years. He was looked after. He had a heart condition. He smoked a pipe.
Poor mother cared for her father.
And mother.
And then cared for her sick husband for 10 years. Bedroom.
Yeah. Yep. So she had... But she was a happy woman. And I tell you what, my mother, all the time that I knew from her growing up, you know, as a baby, right through, she never, ever had a wrinkle on her face. Even right at the end, when she died, she still had a lovely, smooth face. And what she did, she had all of Yulan, which she used to put on her face in the morning, right? It's a moisturizer. And at night before she went to bed, almond oil. And she did that every night, every day. And she never got a wrinkle.
Was she a good woman?
Was she a good woman?
Yes.
How do you mean a good woman?
Well, did you love her?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I grew up with her, my God. Like, it was me and her for the first 7 years of our lives. Because, of course, my father wasn't living there. He was living with his wife.
So they didn't get married for that long after. Oh, that's right, because you went down
with the five shillings. Yeah.
So she was a solo mother for 7 years. She saw off her mum and dad.
Yep.
And then, obviously, your dad was popping over to visit.
Yeah, well,
and then he managed
to deliver the letters.
And then he managed to get a divorce, and your mum and dad could get married when you were seven.
I would have been seven.
And how old were you when he stopped being a postman? Can you remember?
It was before I started work. I started work in the P&T as a telephone technician when I was 15. He was still alive then.
But was he bedridden?
He died. Yeah, he was quite proud of me getting into the post office because he had worked for the post office. And in those days too, because he was a returned soldier and because he worked for the P&T, basically, automatically, any prodigies of
his of course
would be allowed into the P&T.
He was still working when? Was he still working when you were at the P&T?
No. He by the 15. I can't remember whether he died before that or died after. I never really got on much with my father.
But he would have been almost bedridden when your mum married him.
Yes, but he was a naughty person too, because we used to have to help him up, go to the toilet. It'd be mum on one side, me on the other, guiding him. He'd be, like fragile old man with his walking cane. One day, three of his brothers turned up. One lived in Otaki and two others from Auckland or somewhere, and they said, come on, Dick, get up, we're going down to the pub. Well, he's out of bed, got the suit on, got the walking stick, no help at all. Off he goes down to the Café de Paris on the corner, right? Has a few beers, comes back, right? Gets changed, gets back in the bed. Next day, we're carrying him back to the toilet. Yeah, my God. No.
And his name was Richard Richards.
His name was Richard James Richards.
Richard Richards. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Oh, Wally, what a story. My goodness, I am going to be thinking about that for a few days. Don't you love the experience of life, particularly lives that don't run according to Hoyle, and no one's life does? And yeah, it's so wonderful that it's so amazing what your mum and dad went through.
And my regret now is, sometimes I think, oh, such and such. And if I'd remembered, or if I had asked at the time, what was this, or who was that, or whatever. And of course you didn't, and that information's gone now.
Gone.
It went with them to the grave, yeah.
My dad wasn't a reader or a writer, but he wrote out, just scrawled out on a few pages of paper, which I cherish and which I've taken photographs of, his memories from his life. Right?
Okay.
And I love it because he was no writer or anything. He was a truck farm worker and truck driver. And, you know, he talked about starting off with horses and the horses' names, just as an old man remembering snippets from his early life. And so I've captured that, and he put together a family tree with a bit of help and a bit of work. And so I have those memories. But I had a strange thing with him, because when he lay dying, I turned up with my daughter, who was in October, 3 months old. And he was lying there comatose, and he opened his eyes and had that total moment of lucidity. And he looked at this little baby girl, 3 months old, and said, hello. And then he loved kids. My dad adored kids. And then he went back into his coma and died. And so his last words were to my daughter as a baby. And he was in his mid-80s. And I've always cherished that. But it's sad, isn't it? Because my wife's dad and my dad didn't get to see, our kids at this age. And they'd be so proud of them. And you, it's life, right?
True.
But
true.
My dad would have loved my two sons so much. He knew my son. He was really almost because I was in politics, my dad looked after my son so much and made him who he is in many ways. It was a wonderful relationship. And but he'd be so proud of my son now, who's in his mid-30s and got his own family. And he didn't get to see all that. But that's how life goes. True. How wonderful, Wally. What a trip that is. What a trip. What a trip you have given us. What a treasure.
Yeah.
Now, let's get back to gardening. I'm still thinking of your lovely mother.
Right. Min was her name. Oh, her actual name was Wilhelmina. She was called Min for short. She was mother was Scottish, and her father, my grandfather, he was English.
And she had 13 brothers and sisters older than her.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. All of them have gone now, of course.
And the postman.
But, yeah. a big family, and there was big families in those days, no TV, you know, not a lot to do at night. Even the radio was maybe or may not be that was going.
The funny thing is, if you had 14 children, right, the oldest is often married with their own children and you're still having little brothers and sisters, if you know what I mean, because let's say you had a child every 2 years. Well, is that possible when you have 14? I don't know. The oldest one's like mid-20s and you're still having a baby.
True. And the older ones will look after the younger ones. Yes. You know? And I suppose, too, there was some sense in it because we didn't have Social Security and the backup in those days. So the big family, and it's still in places on the planet where it's the old mother and father depend on their children growing up, earning and supporting.
Yes. Right?
And that's how it used to be in the old times.
How wonderful. You're on Rally Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. You're probably wondering who I'm talking to if you don't know the voice. It's Wally Richards, our gardening guru. We took a trip down memory lane to talk history and World War One, and Wally's dad and his mum. And it's such a beautiful story. And you realise that almost anyone's life could make a movie. And you never rate it yourself because it's just your life. But it's actually so interesting to others.
I read somewhere on social media or something, it was on the internet, that somewhere, I think it was a library in America, where you could go in there and you could pay X amount of dollars and an old person would sit there and tell you their life story. You paid for it?
Wow.
And what an interesting thing, because I know people who, like 70s, 80s, 90s and so forth, they have got a history.
History.
And to sit down at their knee, more or less, and listen to them say what they did, how they did it, and where they went and what they did would be amazing. And you pay them $25 or $50 for an hour session.
Well, imagine just wandering around an old people's home and having a cup of tea with people. And the thing is, when you're young, you have no interest. No interest in your parents' history or background, no history in those old aunts and old uncles and granddads and grandmas. You love them. But when they start talking about the old days, what it was like when we were young, you sort of switch out for some reason. And, you know, I notice it with my kids. And they'll grow up and they'll regret. They're slightly interested, to be fair. I have an advantage with young children nowadays because I tell them stories of, well, here's an example. I tell them stories of, I don't know how it got into, my daughter does a little bit, does boxing once a week, and she's loving it. And I told her Muhammad Ali's story, and she was quite interested in that. But I have the advantage because I dialed up on the interweb and got, there's a great, what is my name? It's called, it's an HBO 2-part documentary, which just Muhammad Ali talking and fighting, and it's a great documentary, and we can watch it. And so she's living, and, you know, she's realizing this is the greatest sportsman athlete of all time who changed America, changed the world in many ways. And so you can see it, if you know what I mean.
So
it becomes real to her. Likewise, I'll be talking, I got talking about Roy Orbison. And so we've watched Roy Orbison clips on YouTube. And so you can see it, and it comes to life that there are young people who are exciting, not just old people doddering around in Zimmer frames. Wally, tell us about strawberries.
Right.
What should we be doing?
First thing about strawberries, what is it? Is it a fruit?
It's a fruit.
No, it's not. A strawberry is not a fruit. Do you know the definition of a fruit?
Well, that was my next question. Well, I always think of a fruit being on a tree.
A fruit is something that has seed on the inside. A stone, a pip, whatever. A fruit is something that has seed. In
that's
other words,
not, that's not true.
Yes, it is. It's no, a true it's definition.
What's a banana?
Bananas are vegetable. It doesn't have fruit.
Oh, I thought I'd caught you.
No.
Bananas are bloody fruit. When I go to the supermarket, Wally, it's in the fruit section.
I know they put it there in the wrong place. I've complained about that for years. I've even told them. A strawberry has its seeds on the outside, not the inside.
What does the outside mean?
On the outside, you look at a strawberry and you'll see the seeds on the outside.
Oh, the dots.
Yeah, that's the seeds.
Go to hell.
Yeah. So it's actually truly a vegetable.
So what's a pumpkin?
A pumpkin is a fruit.
I'm going to have to check you up on the interweb on this.
No, you look it up. You see, the true definition of a fruit is a thing that has the seed on the inside, not the outside.
I guess that's true. Apples, passion fruit, apricots.
Yep. All got seeds on the inside.
Well done, Wally.
Cucumbers got seed on the inside. Radish is a fruit, of course, because it doesn't have seeds. It has seeds on the outside. It flowers and then has seed. So, yeah. Just a thing. And now,
what about a potato?
Potato doesn't have a potato is its own seed.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So now, is it a fruit or a vegetable? It's a vegetable, right?
Yep. Now here's the thing. You go into the supermarket and you get yourself a little jar of what's called strawberry jam, which is not strawberry jam at all, right? It's a jelly with a strawberry flavor, right? But you say, oh, but it's got pips in there. There's a factory in Canada who makes the strawberry pips for them to put into the strawberry supposed jam.
You are.
No, I'm
you
not.
You are having me on. Wally.
No, that's a fact.
You are pulling my leg.
No way.
That's disgusting.
They make the little pips. It's added to the jelly, which is called strawberry jam. But it's not strawberry jam. It's a jelly that's flavored strawberry with woody little pieces of wood.
No, my God. Oh, my God. What have we done to ourselves? We're poisoning ourselves.
Yeah, of course. Well, we're not. They are poisoning us. Get it right. We don't intentionally poison ourselves, and we're led to believe that all these things that we eat are supposedly good, you know, but in actual fact, they can be full of poisons. They're not.
You're not going to tell me that raspberry jam's cooked too.
Raspberry jam doesn't have pips, does it?
Is it made from raspberries?
Sorry.
Is it made from raspberries?
Yeah, of course, from raspberry jam. Sure. Oh, unless you're buying it from the supermarket, but it's made out of jelly.
No, that's what I mean, raspberry jam in the supermarket.
I don't know. I know about strawberries because I found that out a long time ago. But I dare say all the jams you buy in the supermarket are jelly flavoured. And anything you buy from a road stall or somewhere, or we go to a strawberry farm and they have strawberry jam, they have real strawberries. And I love making strawberry jam. It's with good, nice, ripe strawberries, or even the frozen ones. You buy a big bag of frozen strawberries at the supermarket, bring it home, put them in the – I've got a big old brass preserving pan, like with a handle. Oh, magic. It comes from way back. It's over 100 years old. And put the strawberries in there with the sugar, and then you stir it all up. And you know what you do when it's all basically ready to put into your little strawberry glass jars. You have that scum on the top.
Yeah.
You put a little knob of butter into there, and the scum just disappears.
Wow. My goodness.
Anyway, strawberries.
Growing strawberries, Wally. We need to do some gardening.
Here's a letter, or an email, should I say, from a reader who actually is a horticulturalist themselves. And she said, "Good morning, Wally. I wanted to thank you for the great advice and products. I'm a qualified gardener, did my apprenticeship with the council in the 80s in amendment horticulture and still working for them. I have been following your strawberry advice this past summer and I've had the best crop ever. Last year, I may have had 3 decent feeds for the whole of summer from my 30-plus plants. This year, we were getting a feed or 2 every week and still picking now." And that was on yesterday I got this email. "I've also been using your products for psyllid control on my tomatoes for the past 3 years and had the best crop ever this year too. I suspect it was because I kept up the recommended applications of your tomato food to the roots. Also, I sprinkled around my strawberries, to which I think they appreciated." And yeah, that's nice. That was coming from a qualified gardener that's done all the time. And of course, what she was doing is, we have a product called Microsyn. Now, I think I've spoken about that before, but with strawberries, it is incredible. You can spray the plants with the diluted mix on a weekly basis, and you will, and it's been proven, increase your crop by about 400%, right? As opposed to not doing it. I had a gardener that actually tested it. He did 2 rows. He said, "I treated one with your Microsyn, the other." He said, "The first row, yeah, we got strawberries and they fruited eventually, and they fruited so long and then they finished." He said the other row, which we sprayed weekly with Microsyn, it fruited early. The strawberries were much, much bigger, and it was still fruiting long after the other row had finished, right? And what you simply do is you get Microsyn, you put it into a trigger sprayer with the water, and you put it next to where your strawberries are growing, ideally out of direct sunlight. So when you walk past, you go, oh, and you spray the plants. And as a result of that, you notice within a couple of days, they have responded. They have actually grown a bit, and they look different, and they look better. So you do that once a week. I had a grower I heard about. Commercial grower, he heard about the Microsyn. He thought, "My God, I'll put this into my strawberries." So he did, but he didn't read the instructions. And what he did, he actually put more into he diluted it, it doubled the strength, right? And he sprayed the crops with that. He ended up cursing it because the strawberries grew so big that the containers that he normally sold as strawberries in were too small. He had to go out and buy new containers to be able to sell the strawberries.
Tell me, I'm sitting at home listening, and I'm Rodney Hyde, and I don't know anything about strawberries. What should I do? I want strawberries. I want to grow them.
May, which is this month, is the traditional time which strawberry plants should come available from growers. Last year, because of the floods in different parts of the country, there was very, very few strawberry plants available, right? And unfortunately nowadays, where back in my time when I had a garden centre, I had contacts with a grower. He used to sell me a box of 1,000 plants in which we would actually put them into trays and sell them in clumps or whatever. So people could get a dozen plants for maybe $1. Nowadays, you'd be lucky to get 1 plant for $1, and they're in pots, generally speaking. Strawberries have runners. Now, funnily enough, my strawberries this season didn't have runners, and I don't know why. And I've had 1 or 2 gardeners say the same thing, but other gardeners said, no, my strawberries had runners, blah, blah, blah. The runners come off the mother plant, and they form, at the end of the runner, leaves and little rootlets, which is a new strawberry plant, right? Strawberry beds, they say they're only good for a couple of years. Now, that's wrong. I've found if you're using Microsyn, you can have a strawberry bed that's several years old, still producing good strawberries. The only problem is that the mother plant tends to get a clumpy and gets too clumpy, and at some point of time doesn't produce so well. But you can divide that up. It's another way of getting your strawberries. You can grow strawberries from seed. That's on the outside, and it's a vegetable. Don't forget it's a vegetable. Next time you're in the supermarket, readers, go into there, and they've got strawberries and say, you got them in the wrong place, they're a vegetable. Move them over there with the cauliflowers. So, yeah, basically at this point of time, strawberries can grow in a container quite happily. They can grow in a trough. My favorite way in the past was I would make a wooden trough, which would be about 18 centimeters deep and about 18 centimeters wide out of timber. And if it was tantalized timber, I would paint the inside, the whole thing, before I put it together with a couple of coats of acrylic paint to keep the chemicals in. And then I'd, you know, the top rail of your iron fence, yeah, wooden rail, I would nail it onto that or screw it onto that, right? Perfect. It's on the top rail. It's 18 centimeters wide. You get plants all the way down. The fruit often would hang over the edge. Mm. Birds couldn't get it then because it was over the edge. And nice height to pick from, etc. And if the birds were a problem, you just got a bit of bird netting and some number 8 wire made in hoops, put that over. You could fold it back, pick your strawberries, fold it there, keep the birds off. Simple, easy. They like a reasonable amount of sunlight, but they don't need all-day sun. In fact, strawberries are a wooden creature, and they like dabbled light, you know, sun-dabbled type of thing in their situation. They love the beneficial fungi in the soil, seeing they're wooden, and the alpine strawberries. Now, if you can, get yourself an alpine strawberry plant. They're white strawberries. When they're ripe, they're white, right?
No.
Different shape, not very big, right? But they grow like a weed once you get them, because all, and they come from seeds so easy, because the seeds on the outside, they're vegetable. You take your alpine strawberry and you give it a squeeze out. You've got all the seeds there. You just sprinkle them somewhere in the garden, whatever, and they will turn into plants over a year or so, and they'll produce all these little white strawberries, which are beautiful taste. They're lovely.
So I get my I get my strawberries from the garden shop plants. Mm-hmm. When I make the bed, do I get soil and mix in some horse manure or chicken poop?
Yep. Horse manure is excellent.
Plant them in, and I have a raised bed or flat bed?
Well, you could have it in the garden, yeah, right? Just normal. You worked your horse manure and stuff into the soil.
Yeah. How do I apply the Microsyn and when?
That's going to be sprayed on.
On the leaves?
Yeah, on the leaves. So that's
and do you do that when you first plant them and then regularly, or do you just do it the once?
Yep, you start off right at the beginning. There's also my secret to strawberry food too, which is ideal to give them about a quarter of a teaspoon every month. Not very much, just a little bit. But that will – I had a lady. She used my tomato food, my Wally's Secret tomato food, on her strawberries, and she sent me a picture of her strawberries, and they were bigger than apricots. She said it's your bloody food, and they're so big, and she'd be using the Microsyn as well, so the combination of the two. So the secret strawberry food, you put a little bit of that in the planting hole or side dress the plants with it. You only have to do that maybe once every 2 or 3 months during the season. You don't need a lot of food.
And once you get your strawberry bed going, it could last forever.
Yes, though each
you got the
winter,
clumper.
You will tidy it up. Yep. Like a lot of the old leaves will go brown. You clean them up. If you've got a lot of runners, you may have to separate them out a bit and, or replant them, make another bed. Ideally, you have some protection against the birds because the birds, of course, love strawberries just like we do. And the biggest problem that I've had people complaining to me that have used the strawberry food and used the microcin, they've complained to me and they said it's cost us a bloody fortune for the cream.
There you go. Wally, that's strawberries. We were going to cover garlic, but we got talking about shaving our heads, two old men talking, and then we got talking about old times and parents, and then we got onto strawberries finally, and we never got to the garlic. But I can report, because Wally was worried last time he spoke, that it might be tough to get garlic. You can readily buy garlic online. I got some garlic that just arrived from Grow Yours was the company. And so next week, if you want to grow garlic, and I got such a shock, I didn't know what garlic was because I'd been buying it from the shop, the supermarket. It was like the strawberry jams, not garlic. When I
now, here's an important thing. This is very important. Last year, I bought garlic in, and I had some seed left over from the cloves, should I say, not seed, left over from the previous year. And they had been free of the garlic rust. The stuff I brought in had, I'm sure, in the bulbs, the rust. So what I've done this year to overcome that problem is you take the bulb and you take the cloves off the bulb, right?
Yes.
Now, you take the nice big fat ones, those are the ones you're going to plant, the skinny little ones, into the kitchen. You can use them to eat, right?
Yeah.
Then once you've got your big fat cloves off, you take potassium permanganate, which is Conti's crystals. You put about a teaspoon of that into a couple of litres of water and throw them all in. That will kill any rust spore that may be on the cloves, right? So you start off without any rust.
How long do you leave them in the Conti's crystals for?
Oh, an hour or two or overnight.
Okay.
And then we'll after that, you plant. Yep.
We'll talk next week, next time we're on, about garlic. Wally, send us a text, everyone, or an email with questions for Wally. 2057 for the text, email inbox at radleycheck.radio. I hope people aren't too upset with us talking about old man things. But we did get to strawberries. I'm going to get onto my strawberries. It'll be a bit later down south, I guess, Wally, but I'll see when they turn up at the garden centre.
Yeah, they should be there now. Okay. Fact. Yep.
We'll go. Okay, Wally, so nice talking. Talk soon.
Yep. Thank you. Bye now.
That's the lovely Wally Richards, Professor Gardening Guru. And what a remarkable story about a remarkable woman, his mum. And a remarkable story about his dear dad, World War I veteran. Remarkable lives we have, all of us. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Thank you for listening in. It's a pleasure to have you.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.